Welcome, this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're going to have a show that kind of encapsulates the three shows we did dealing with energy conservation, about, I think it was 8 or 9 months ago, sometime around last spring. I wanted to do a show that kind of condensed it and put it in more perspective with the shows that I've been doing on renewable energy. Now, if you've been listening in, you know that a week ago I did a show that dealt with that subject. And also, if you've had a chance to listen to my show on Sundays on WDIS radio, WDIS.com, if you happen to be listening on the Internet, you know that I've been trying to explain the various ways that we can use energy, the problems that we have in changing our perspective from unrenewable or energies that are millions of years old that have been, you know, forced into our earth through gravity and other means, and energy that we can depend upon getting back on a regular basis and have a much less impact on polluting our planet and decreasing the amount of potential climate change. So these are the shows that I've been doing, but I wanted to have a show tonight that kind of dovetailed into those concepts, but dealt with the most important element about anything to deal with energy. This is the single most important thing, and that is energy conservation. Because if we don't conserve energy in the next few years, now I'm not talking about decades. I know that everybody's talking about decades, 2050 this, 2070 that, 2030 that. That isn't going to make any difference. We have to conserve energy today and tomorrow, and we need to do so at a rate that is somewhat astonishing for other things that we have tried to change in our past, meaning that most changes in our past have been determined to be by generation, sometimes multiple generations, other than things that took place like during World War I and especially World War II. Our society is used to relatively small changes. I'm suggesting that we need to make some huge changes in terms of energy conservation. Now, I'll explain what all that means, but I think it's important that we are on the same page about how important this is. Because if we can't make this greater shift in the amount of energy that we use to live our daily lives without significantly changing in a negative way our lifestyle. I'm not telling you you're going to have to go live in an igloo. Forget about that. I wouldn't do it myself. But I am saying that we need to make some fairly fast changes that are significant but not radical in terms of our lifestyle. And I'm going to go through them with you this evening. I'm going to enumerate them, and I'll speak about them as much as I have time to do so within the hour permits. If you would like to join in, you can by calling 877-876-5227 if you are in the U.S. Let's say you're in Canada. Hey, love to hear from you. 888-815-9756 while we're on the air. Okay, so let me get to the point. We are expending enormous amounts of energy that is wasted. And I mean wasted, I mean like doesn't do us any good whatsoever, costs us a lot of money. I'm sure some of you got my attention just now, right? And pollutes our planet significantly. As a matter of fact, an interesting thought about this is that energy that we waste actually pollutes our planet more than the energy that we use in some circumstances. So wasted energy sometimes is the worst kind of energy. This is really a serious subject. Now, okay, I'm going to try to go through our lifestyle. I'm going to talk about it in terms of, like, I'll start with where we live. I'm going to go room by room in your apartment or house or wherever you might be living. Hopefully it's not a tent because I'm not going to go into tents today. But I'm going to cover the things that most people are used to try to show that everything we do, we can improve upon, in many cases, our lifestyle. If not improve upon it, then not make that much of a change and save significant amounts of energy. For every watt we save, we're really saving more more in terms of energy production than 1 watt, because there's it takes a waste of energy to even produce energy. So conservation is actually better than getting free energy, if we could get it, from some source. It's actually better than that, because we save more by conserving than if we could just get free energy, like someone could dump it on us, you know, and say, well, here's a whole bunch of megawatts of power because you've been nice people this year, and here's a whole bunch of them. It would still be better if we actually conserved similar amounts of energy, because it actually is more efficient, because making energy still wastes some energy in the process. Okay. Let me begin with where we live, because I like that subject. And this is something that's kind of near and dear to my heart and those that I have some connection with. Because as some of you may know, I'm actually connected to one of the companies I'm connected with, sort of like a disclosure, I guess I'm saying it this way, but it's not really meant to be, is a company that is into energy conservation as well as renewable energy sources. Yeah, we do that. And we have licenses and our contracts and all that stuff. It doesn't really matter. I'm not trying to sell that business to anybody at this point. I'm just telling you that I have a background in this so that you can take what I say with some authority. Yeah. But then again, you could also check out anything I say as well. I'm acting more as an anthology of the whole situation than like giving brand new information. Although some of it may be, because some of the stuff we do is a little proprietary. We've invented it. We had to, because there was no solutions in some circumstances. Let's take a look at the house. Let's look at the outside walls, house or apartment. If the walls are not very well insulated, then through a thing called conductance and also radiance is like, ooh, you shine a light on something, you can feel the energy coming through it, literally. Or conductance is if it's hot outside and cool inside, you know, you can feel the difference in the change of the temperature going through the surface of whatever the structure of the walls are. These kinds of things are going on all the time in the abodes that we have. Now, if we were to make changes in the walls, we could do some things such as the fouling. There actually are coatings, things you can like almost paint on the outside, that make some difference, particularly more in radiance and conductance. We have some products that do a little bit of both. But radiance is the thing, like when the sun's shining on it, most of it reflects off, and you don't get this tremendous heat buildup if it's a solar issue. That's a good thing. It doesn't help if it's like the middle of winter, though, because actually the sun you would like to have come in at that time. But it does help during the summertime, especially in warm to hot climates. So that's something to consider. Also, a big deal, probably one of the major issues, are windows. Now, you probably say, oh, yeah, I heard about getting new windows, but they're really expensive. They sure are. There's just about nothing you can do that's more expensive than to pull all your windows out and put new ones in. It's really expensive. Guess what? You don't have to do that to get some of the benefits, and sometimes even better benefits, than if you did the thing with the windows. Instead, there are new kinds of films that can go on glass that can be applied in various ways. And again, this is something that's a little bit proprietary to us, that will both block out any radiant energy coming from the sun, yeah, all that stuff that we don't want. It can also knock out some of the ultraviolet so it doesn't fade out your carpets and things. But most importantly, and most people don't know this, if you use the right kinds of films and the right kinds of circumstances, you can actually cut down conductance through the window. The amount of energy that just passes through, because glass isn't that great of an insulator. Particularly, even if you have an airspace and another piece of glass and another airspace and another piece, you know, like dual pane and triple pane windows, those help, but they don't actually match the walls. They don't even come close to, in most circumstances, to the amount that the walls are keeping out the same amount of energy, or vice versa. So if we want to improve upon that, we can do it by using these films, which amazingly sometimes are better at the conductance issue than the windows are themselves. Wow. There's some other advantages. They also prevent breakage and or reduce it significantly. So that's a nice thing. In case you worry about your windows getting broken, they may also resist some types of theft in certain circumstances. They're good for stores. That's another place they're really good for. Okay, so the walls and now the windows of the places that we live can be improved upon. That can reduce the energy output or uses of our homes, etc., by like 20% or more. Wow, that's a big deal. That's just the beginning. I'm just starting off. I'm just getting warm, all right? Now, let's talk about another thing. Heating and cooling systems. They are like antiques. These systems that we're using today were invented in the 20s and 30s of the last century, and they aren't that much more efficient. They are somewhat. The main efficiency improvements has been with like having giant radiators on them. They got bigger and bigger radiators, so they transmit heat better to the outside world or cold, depending upon the season. And they do this, you know, better than they used to because they actually, we use more materials, we use up more resources in the process, too, to try to improve the efficiency. But the fact of the matter is most of the efficiency is wasted in an air conditioner or in a heating source. Most of it is wasted through the duct system. Most ducts are like sieves. All the air that's heated or cooled that's going out is actually heating and cooling places other than the place we are staying in. It's usually going up in an attic or sometimes even to the outside. This is a way we can solve this. And it doesn't take much. It just takes some intelligence. There's several different ways of sealing off ductwork so that virtually none of the energy is wasted. Wow. And it can be done in a relatively efficient and economical way, depending upon where the ducts are. I mean, in some cases, it's hard to get to those things. But also, not only does it leak out, which is really serious, and not only does it absorb energy from the environment it's in, like if it's in a hot attic, you're superheating the cool air in the summertime that you're trying to cool your house with, and it's coming from the attic. Oh, that's not good. Okay. Then what else can we do about the system that I'm talking about? We can actually raise the efficiency of an air conditioner or a heating system, if it's a heat pump, by changing the thermodynamics of the system, provided that certain conditions are met and certain slight changes in the way the unit works are met, so that it doesn't freeze over and a couple other things. And this can improve the efficiency of just the air conditioner or heater, if it's an electric unit or in some cases gas units, by as much as 25% or more. That's without doing anything to the ducts. If you add the ducts, you can double it. 50% improvement in heating and cooling is possible depending upon the system that you're using. If you're in the Northeast and you're using oil, ducts are still an issue. It doesn't, even if it's just an oil furnace, you can still make tremendous improvements. And those old oil furnaces are known to be quite inefficient. Let me tell you, there's lots of things you can do with them as well. Okay, so I'm just throwing out some ideas here because most people have absolutely none of these concepts in mind when they think about, gee, I'm going to have to go without this or that if I have to conserve. I'm not talking about giving up anything. The houses, just doing the things I said so far, run a lot nicer. Instead of losing something, the air is cleaner, everything is much more consistent. Instead of having big swings in the temperature change, you know what that's like? It's too hot, it's too cold, it's never quite right. You'll wake up in the middle of the night, you're sweating or you're freezing. I mean, all of that goes away. Tell me that isn't an improvement in lifestyle. Yes, it is, and nobody's torturing you, and it's called conservation. It's really working for you, and you're saving money. Saving money. The net cost of these things is a positive cash flow, especially if we have the right kind of financing program, and that's what I'm going to talk about, hopefully by the end of the show, that the government can help us with, because they're talking about doing stuff. Now, we have private companies that sometimes have helped in the past, and some of them are a little shaky right now with the credit situation, but maybe we can get it all back. In the meantime, let's keep going here because I got so much to talk about. so much. Okay, so now we've covered just a small area of the house. Let's go into the kitchen. Most people have kitchens, I know. If you don't have a kitchen, you're probably barbecuing outside, but whatever. Let's call it a kitchen. If you are using a form of natural gas or electricity to cook your food, there's a better way to do it in many circumstances. Now, I know everybody knows about microwaves these days, and they are efficient ways of cooking. Yeah, microwaves make sense. The only problem is, have you ever tried to microwave bakery products or something? Yeah, I know what they come out like. That's no good. That is not an improvement in lifestyle as far as I'm concerned. What is an improvement? Well, if you're cooking on a stove, there's a thing called magnetic induction. You got to have pots that kind of are ferrous, which means that a magnet works on them. It'll attach itself to it. Then you know those pots will work. If you don't, you're going to have to get pots to work with this kind of system. What's so neat about magnetic induction? It puts no heat outside of the heat it puts into the pot and food into the house. If you're using a gas burner, it's huge. I mean, you're like, oh, crank it up, you know. You ever stand in a kitchen where you have the ovens and the burners going at the same time if you got gas cooking? Oh, my God. It's like, you know, if it's a summertime, you're not going to be able to keep it cool enough, right? If it's a wintertime, the thing that's nice about it will be the warmest room in the house. But it's not very pleasant. Same thing about electric. If you're using electric, only thing with electricity, what's so nasty about that is it doesn't immediately change its temperature. Thing about magnetic induction, almost instantly changes its temperature. Most, if not all, of the energy that you're cooking with goes directly into the pot and the food, and the stove stays relatively cool. Unless you touch the pot, you can't even burn yourself. And there's virtually no wasted energy. Every watt we put in the house, if it's summertime, it takes 2 watts to take it out. Wow. That's on an average. That's a huge amount of wasted energy, particularly for people who live in warm climates. I'm talking to you from Arizona. If you're in the Northeast, this may not concern you quite as much, but I'm talking about things that will concern people throughout the country. So one thing might affect one group of people more than another. And if you're in a different country, well, you know, we all have different conditions, but these same things may apply. What about this magnetic induction? Well, there are portable units that are available now that are relatively inexpensive. If you buy the big fancy things, yeah, you could go buy a small, you know, a used car for what they cost. But if you get some of these less expensive ones, and if you contact us, I'll let you know what's available. Some of them are really neat. They work great. And you can portably move them around. They just plug it in the wall. I mean, there's, you know, and they're fantastic. They cook so much faster. If you're really into boiling water, which I am, sometimes it's my main form of cooking is boiling water. But the thing is, it does it faster than anything else, and it does it with less energy. Wow. Okay. Hey, have I sold you on this? I hope so, because that's another neat thing for the kitchen. Yeah. What else? Let's move out of the kitchen and look at the bathrooms. Okay. Bathrooms. Try to use toilets that flush using less water, because water takes energy. I know it doesn't make any sense, because you say, well, how does water take energy? Are you talking about cold water in a toilet or hot water? No, I'm not talking about either. It doesn't matter the temperature of the water at this moment. It's just that to get it to your house or to get it to your apartment takes a pump, and that takes energy. Now, you might not know where that pump is, but it's somewhere, I guarantee it, because it didn't get there by falling off a cliff unless you happen to be near an aqueduct. And then in that case, you're very lucky. But most of us aren't living near aqueducts unless we live in Rome. And consequently, someone has to pump that water to us and use the energy. You didn't know that. Yeah, it's the truth. I know. It's like, we just think it comes magically. You open up the faucet and it comes out, right? Well, no, there has to be energy pushed into it. And that energy we pay for in part of the price of paying for our services. They might be connected to our trash bill, or there might be a separate water bill. Part of the price of the water is getting to us. It's also in purifying and clarifying and all the other stuff. And all that takes energy, chemical energy and mechanical energy to do. And so, consequently, if we can save any kind of water, we're saving energy in the process, even though we don't realize it, or may not realize it. What else can be done? I suggest using shower heads that are somewhere between 1.5 and 2.5 gallons per minute. They are listed these days. If you're using anything over 2.5 gallons per minute, you are just throwing money away. Because not only are you wasting all the energy that it took to get the water to you, but if it's a shower, you most likely heat that water, right? I don't care if you're heating it even with solar. The fact of the matter is you're wasting energy. Everything takes some form of energy. And it's way more efficient to use a lot less water than it is to put a $4,000 to $6,000 solar heating system on your roof to heat only about a third of the actual hot water you use, because that's what it works out to. It just doesn't pay for itself very well. I'm not a big fan of those. Some places, they make more sense than others, but in a lot of cases, they just cost too much for what you get returned on them. Because the fact of the matter is, when the sun isn't shining, which is a lot of the time that people need hot water, your water's cooling down as you use it, and you don't have any backup source other than you got it, gas or electricity. And so you're still just trapped into the same thing. You just feel better because you got this monstrosity in your roof. And you think you're getting a lot of free energy from the sun. And the fact is that those systems are sometimes less than 50% efficient in converting the energy from the sun into energy that goes into your solar hot water tank in the first place. And the whole system is a kind of a Rube Goldberg. That's like a guy who used to make all kinds of crazy inventions in the comic strips. Kind of invention that half the time just doesn't work all that efficiently. And even when it works at its top efficiency, unfortunately, the sun doesn't shine that often. So we have issues. We have issues about that kind of system. Some are better than others. Some people like the ones that have everything up on the roof. Those are kind of interesting. They came from Australia originally. They work exceptionally well where the sun shines a lot and it's very hot and dry. It works great. But if you live in Louisiana, I don't think you're going to love it too much. Okay, so it all depends on where you live as far as the situation is concerned. All right, let's move out of the bathroom or bathrooms. Now, I want to mention one other thing. Instead of having a central hot water tank, in some circumstances, nowadays, just because they've gotten these better, it may pay, especially if you're putting in a new, building a new house or putting in a new tank or getting rid of an old tank, to use individual hot water heaters that heat only the water. They don't have a tank that holds the water, because when you hold the water, eventually it loses its energy. So that's an important issue. If you do have a tank, by the way, instead of just buying one of these tank blankets, make yourself a insulation that goes around the tank. Give me a call or write to me. I'll tell you more about how to do that. Three layers of a very cheap product, much less money than you'll probably spend on a blanket that goes over the tank, will hold a lot more of the energy into the tank. Just be careful if you have a gas one that you don't cut off all the oxygen supply and asphyxiate yourself. You wouldn't want to do that. And so the point here is that you can really hold in the energy that's in the water inside your water tank for longer periods of time by far than most people are doing. Even if they have an insulated tank, the tank is insulated and you buy an extra blanket and put it over it and all, it's still not as good as doing this other stuff. Also, wrapping all the pipes you can find is really helpful. It makes a big difference. You can save about half of the energy that you normally would waste on the standing water that is heated in your tank. Also, you can turn it down a little bit, say 130, whatever. If you feel that's appropriate, that's okay. But remember that if you're washing dishes and things, you want the water to be a certain temperature, because otherwise it won't sterilize the dishes and get them clean. So there's a trade-off on that. And remember, I'm not trying to get people to change their lifestyle in ways that makes them feel miserable. So we're not going into that picture. Okay, now let's go right to where the tank is located. If we wrap the tank and we're doing all the things I just said, it's important also to put a clock on the tank if you have a time of use energy system. And most of us are going to have that within the next year, whether we like it or not, because we're going to rationing. Yeah, they call it something else, demand response. But it's really rationing, because we're not going to have enough energy in this country unless people start adopting what I'm talking about to meet our needs. And we're going to have to start dialing back some times of the day. And the power companies in some locations are putting in meters that are going to do it for you. Isn't that wonderful? They're so friendly to us. And so we're going to come home, say, gee, it's a little warm in here. I think I'll turn the air on. Push the button, and it says, DR, DR. And you're going to say, what's DR? And it's going to say, demand response. You can't have any right now, but wait a couple hours, and I'll turn on. Oh, you're going to love it. We all will. Okay, that's coming because we haven't built any, or have built almost no coal-fired plants. 51% of our power comes from coal. We've built only a, maybe one or two coal-fired plants in this country since 2003. And we have, are depending upon coal to be our main source of electricity. But guess what? We're running out of electricity because we're using like 5 or 10% more every year, and we don't have the plants to make it. That's a problem, and the reason they stopped building those plants is because they're concerned, the people who are building them, that they're going to have to sequester, which means take the CO2 out of the smokestacks and stick it someplace else, sequester the CO2 and other gases that come out of the plant because of changes in our laws. And it's probably true. So because they don't think they're going to be able to afford to do that, it costs 60% or more to produce energy from coal where the greenhouse gases are sequestered. That's a lot more money. We're all going to either have to pay the bill or live with more and more rationing and eventually just play not enough electricity in general. Something to consider. I've already mentioned that in a prior show, but I wanted to fit in with what we're talking about right now. Okay. All right, so what else? Let's move to someplace else. Let's look at the attic itself. A lot of energy is wasted. Either heat from the house goes up into the attic if it's the wintertime, or it comes down from the attic if it's the summertime. And the best thing we can do is insulate, super insulate, between the attic and the house. A lot of people say, well, I got R30 up there. Well, that's nice. R30 of what? Is it little puffs of fiberglass? It'll like cotton, look like cotton balls or the balls of fiberglass blown in. Problem with that is they allow air to go around them. They have an insulation value of a conductance value that is R30 if you get it so deep. But unfortunately, they allow air to go through. It's called air infiltration, and they leak like a sieve. The best stuff to use is probably cellulose. It's stuff that's just like newspapers that's been made into a almost burn-proof product that fills in all the spaces. Even if you have fiberglass in there right now, whether it's the rolled-out kind or the little balls, it's better to put some cellulose over that because it will fill in all the cracks and it will get rid of some of that air infiltration coming through that's going either up from the house in the wintertime or down into the house in the summertime, making us miserable and really putting a tremendous greater load on the air conditioner. How much? 25%. That's what we're looking at, the average house. Yeah, about 20. You start adding up these numbers. I hope you're adding them up. It's a big number. This is huge. This is tremendously huge. You know what? We're going to have to go to break, but when we come back, I'm going to tell you a bunch more. I'm going as fast as I can so we don't miss anything. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back, and sorry about that. The station manager's kind of running the show tonight, and our regular engineer is kind of, I guess he's on vacation or doing something. At any rate, we had some dead air there. That's a terrible thing in radio, but it's not so terrible. It really gives everybody a chance to cool off, you know. And we didn't get our commercials going until a couple of minutes after I thought we were doing it. And unfortunately, I don't know for sure what's going on. And I have no way of letting anybody know on the other side, really. Not in any immediate sense. About a couple minutes down the road, I can try to do something about it. But anyway, hey, we're back. And let me continue on now with my going through all of the things, and I can't really cover all of them on this show, but I'm going to do as many as I possibly can to give you a feel for what we can conserve, what we can save. Hopefully this is starting to make some sense, because these numbers are big. We're talking a lot of energy. You start adding these things up, and most people can live for save two-thirds the amount of energy and half of their electric bill. Wow. Now that is really cooking. And okay, let's cover a few other things in the house, because then I got to move to other areas. I just wanted to start with that, because most people, that's the place everybody's, you know, we spend a lot of our time there, right? And this also applies to stores, by the way. If you're a retailer, or if you've got a plant or whatever, you can save huge amounts of energy doing similar things in a commercial environment. So these kinds of things directly apply regardless of the type of structure we're dealing with. They're talking about doing federal office buildings. Hey, we could do those. Those are even easier. Let's talk about light for a second. I like light. Light is great. But light, if it's incandescent, takes tremendous amounts of energy. And if it's a summertime, you cook with it. I mean, literally. It puts out, you ever touch a light bulb when it's on? A regular incandescent, man, you burn your hand off, right? Guess what? There are better answers. The new CFLs, you know, those are the little fluorescent bulbs that don't look like fluorescents anymore. They actually use about one-fourth or one-fifth the amount of energy. Now, they use a little bit of mercury in them, and mercury is not the greatest thing because it can get into our landfills and stuff, although now they're starting to recycle that, and that's a good thing. But they're becoming so inexpensive, and there are so many different frequencies you can get that you can mix them in the same room. You can have three different, four different kinds of lights that makes it look like natural daylight or whatever kind of light you like. It used to be fluorescent lights gave you ugly lights that nobody liked. Now you can get better, nicer light out of fluorescence, if you mix them right, than you can out of incandescence. Really. So again, no lifestyle change, maybe a lifestyle improvement, depending upon how you want to light up your life. But the important thing is that you're saving energy, and I mean lots of energy, because remember that old thing, 1 watt in to 2 watts out. If we put heat in, like through incandescent lights, we say we put in 1,500 watts into our house for incandescent lights, it's going to take 3 kilowatts, 3,000 watts, to take out those 1,500, especially in the summertime. Now, if you're in a very cold climate, turning on all the lights might be a pleasant experience, particularly if it's chilly. But then again, you get all that wind going through if you don't deal with the infiltration problem I was telling you about. So, I mean, there are so many issues here. I want to quickly mention we have a product called the Sun Wind Whirler. What does this do? It lowers the temperature of attics up to 60 degrees, and it uses no electricity. It works off the sun and wind, and it does it very efficiently, very effectively, and it isn't very expensive. The amazing thing is if you lower your attic temperatures that much, even if you don't go up and immediately wrap all those ducts and put more insulation, you make a big difference just with this one item. If you add it with all the other things, boy, that's a big deal. Also, it pays to put in more efficient thermostats, by the way. Efficiency in thermostats are thermostats that are more accurate because the less they swing from one side to the other, cold and hot, the less you're apt to either turn up or down the thermostat too much to compensate. So that's a good thing to do. And it's especially important if you live, and again, this is going to be almost all of us, in a time of day plan, because if energy is more expensive at a certain time of the day, these thermostats can change the temperature for you. Some of them work better than others. Get the more expensive ones. They're worth it. And if you have a heater or air conditioning unit that's electric and it has a SEER rating, trying to get the highest SEER rating possible, go for the new 410E units that have high pressure instead of R22. It's better for our atmosphere, and they're about 20% more efficient in general. Some of them even better than that. If you're going to buy an air conditioner, get the absolute most efficient one you can get because it pays for itself. If your air conditioner is more than 5 years old, just go buy a new one. It'll pay for itself. Less than five, I can't really tell you to do that because it probably isn't going to pay for itself. But more than five, in most cases, pay for itself. Even though you got 5 more years left on it in life, better to throw it out and go get a new one. Okay, got to get out of the house, I guess, but I got a lot. Oh, I could tell you so many other things you could do in your house, but that gave you some ideas, didn't it? I hope so. What about things like the government? What can the government be doing to conserve energy? I want to go to a big system now. I was staring in at people's houses. I thought that was kind of interesting. But do you know our transmission lines? Terrible. We're wasting about 27% of our energy because it goes through our transmission lines. Tell me that isn't a rip. Now, we can save at least two-thirds of that. We can save at least 18% of our energy that goes through our transmission lines by just changing from copper to some new materials that have just coming out. And some of these are really looking very promising. There's a very, very, like a molecule, a couple of molecule thick carbon product. Now, I mentioned this on another show, another station. And you can use this material and replace literally 1 mile of line at a time. So it's very, very effective because you don't have to take everything down and rebuild it. And it saves at least two-thirds of the energy, and it's like many times stronger than the copper, so it doesn't break. And you can even make transformers and other things out of it so they last a lot longer and are much more efficient. Wow! That could save us quite a bit of money. And the other thing is they can transmit many times, like 3, 4, 5 times more energy in the same size line. We're going to need to be able to do that because, as I talked about renewable energy, we're going to need to transmit energy over very long distances if we use some of the systems for making big amounts, like huge amounts, mega amounts of electricity in certain types of systems. Very important we have that online as quickly as possible. I think it's part of the president's plan to upgrade our system, but we should be looking at some of these new ways of doing it, because they are much more efficient than the old ways. If we stay with the old technologies and just make them bigger, it's really not a good outcome for us. Copper is a tremendous waste of energy because it takes so much to get it out of the ground and then to process it. It's a fortune. And if you've been buying copper lately, you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so that's something that the government can do in big terms. What about our own transportation, personal transportation systems? Everybody says, oh, take the train, take the bus. Look, if you can do that, that's great. And if you have a bus system that's efficient and working around you, that's terrific. For a lot of people, the train or bus doesn't go where we want to go, and it doesn't do it when we want to do it. So that's our problem, right? Lifestyle is always an issue, and I said I'm not going to force people to change their lifestyles here. So what can we do about our vehicles? Well, there are two types of spark plugs that are available that each of them contribute to about a 10% improvement overall in gas mileage just by changing out the spark plugs. Do I know they work? I've tried one of them for sure, and they certainly work. And the other one I haven't tested yet, but I think it works equally as well. And these spark plugs are readily available. Now, they're a little pricey. And, of course, you have to pay for somebody to put them in unless you're handy. If you're handy, you know how to change plugs. That's great. And that's 10%. How about nitrogen filling of your tires? If you shop at Costco, you know they may offer that when you buy tires. And if you don't shop there, maybe you can pay them. I think it's a couple bucks. They'll put it in per tire or whatever. It's worth it. It doubles the life expectancy of the tire, and tires take a lot of energy to make. Even though, you know, we don't think about this, they actually take a lot of energy to produce, so we're saving that energy. Everything we save energy. Plus, besides lasting twice as long, we're going to get 10 to 15% better gas mileage. Now you say, well, how can you get better gas mileage by putting nitrogen in tires instead of plain old air? Isn't air 80% nitrogen? It is. But you know the 20% or so that's oxygen produces a lot of heat internally and causes the tire to disintegrate. And heat is energy. And when the tires heat up, the car is more resistant to rolling. In other words, it takes more energy to push it. I can swear to this because I put nitrogen in tires and it's then driven a car right afterwards, and it's just like somebody's pushing it. It's like, so the car just floats down the road. It's amazing. So it uses less energy to use nitrogen in the tires. Those are two things. There are several additives. Again, you'll have to contact me. I don't want to give out names on the radio, but the point is that there's several additives that I use that I found gives another 5 or 10% increase in fuel mileage if used together. Used alone, one at a time, they don't seem to do much. When you put them all together, they seem to work better, and the engines run quieter, smoother, same with the transmissions. Everything works a little bit better. So altogether, there's maybe about 30% of savings there. Doesn't sound like a lot when you in each one of the individual categories, but imagine 30% of your fuel mileage is a huge amount. Then the other thing that helps is just how you drive. Try to not come to a full stop when you come to any kind of light or stop sign. Well, stop sign, you got to fully stop unless you live in California. Those people don't have to fully stop. They never stop anyway with tech. But, you know, they have a law that you can kind of roll through. But most places you do. But if you don't have to fully stop before your light turns green, then you save a tremendous amount of energy. Just start slowing down sooner and don't accelerate quickly and try to time all the lights. Now, that's a little hard to do. Some places, I swear, they must have traffic people that are sadists. They make these lights so that you hit every one of them, right? I'd like to know who figured that system out. That's a pretty dumb one. We have computers, in case people haven't heard of it, and there's some cities that make their computers run their lights so that they're as efficient as possible, depending upon the traffic conditions. At any rate, regardless of whether your city does that or not, you can adjust it by just looking further ahead. Make sure your eyes are not trained 20 or 30 feet from your car. It's dangerous anyway. Look way ahead. You'll save gas just by looking ahead. It's also a sign that you're raising your consciousness by looking and planning further ahead before you drive into whatever you're driving into. It shows a certain frame of mind and sense, a better use of your senses overall. That can save about 15, 20% of your gas miles right there. Add that to the 30%, we're up to 50%. That's a huge amount. I mean, that's like going out and buying the super economy model instead of, you know, the whatever car you got right now. That's a big deal. Now, does it pay to buy hybrids and other kinds of high mileage cars? Maybe. If you're in the market for a car, certainly try to get the one that's going to get the best mileage. You can check that out. It isn't all that hard. It always pays to do that, provided that it doesn't cost you so much more for the vehicle that, you know, it's not cost effective. The other thing is you got to be careful because sometimes they cheat on those things. How do they do that? Well, don't just read what the government says. Look at reports on it to see if the vehicle's actually getting the mileage that it's supposed to be. Sometimes they manage to squeak them through these tests, and then they don't really perform the way they're supposed to. Then you'll be disappointed, of course, if that were to happen. Okay, what are some of the other areas in our life that we can really make a difference in terms of saving energy overall? Well, we all try to recycle these days. I think everybody's into that a little bit. But the point is that the things that we recycle sometimes don't make much sense. We we are not necessarily recycling the things that are really, really important. The weirdest thing about this is the things that appear nowadays to be high energy producers are things like electronic devices, and most people aren't recycling those. Even I don't half the time. And I tell you, and because you can't just put it in the bin outside, right? They won't take it. You know, you put it out there, it's the one of the most polluting of all the things, and it has all these other issues. And yet those things are actually use a tremendous amount of energy to be produced. And so try to look up places that are recycling electronic components and things that really take a lot of energy to produce, because that's where the problem is. Metals take a lot of energy to produce. Aluminum takes a lot of energy to produce. Now, I know aluminum cans, yes, that's a good thing. We are recycling those. But other forms of aluminum, sometimes we're not. And so, and they won't necessarily take them if you are in a recycling district, because they only, you know, it has to fit their little whatever niche of what will be recycled or not. So look into other ways to recycle things, other places that you can go to recycle things besides just putting them outside your door. But remember, if you have to drive 20 miles to recycle 10 pounds worth of stuff, the amount of energy you use to get it there is probably not going to save anything and maybe cost you something and cost all of us something. Remember also, when I'm talking about conserving energy, I'm talking about conserving our world, because not only are we freeing ourselves possibly from foreign oil and all the other good things and improving our economy and making ourselves live better for less, but we also may be improving climate change and global warming. And if you don't believe this, just put your hands over your ears. But I'm saying that global warming is for real. It doesn't appear all the time every day as global warming, but it is global warming overall, if you go by the decades for sure. And it's staying up with CO2, and CO2 is rising like crazy. So we're in a serious problem. People say, well, there's no signs of it. Well, there are tremendous signs of it. The ice at the North Pole is almost gone. If you go up there, it used to be 10 feet thick, and now it's like 4 feet thick. And it's less every year. And there's not going to be very much ice there for most of the summers, and it's going to be really terrible. Because our planet is, the things that we're suffering is not just, it's not going to be hotter everywhere. It's going to be severe climate changes that are going to be very, very destructive to us. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about energy conservation, not just all the other things, which are important on a personal level, but on a big, wide scale, it's important to save our planet for those reasons as well. Because you know what? Someday we're going to wake up and we're going to say, uh-oh, things have really got past the point where we can stop this. That's not the day I want to be around. Because that day is the day, the beginning of the end of the way we understand our life to be in this world. Now, maybe some of us will survive, but not the way we want to. And I'm sure we don't want to see billions of people suffer and or die. Okay, what other things can we do in terms of energy conservation right now? Well, it is important to recognize that in every respect, all of the ways that we use things require some use of energy. So if we can make things last longer overall, anything we own, then we don't have to replace them, and everything that we replace requires more energy to produce. And so almost in every case, most people are wasting their resources by not maintaining them correctly. I don't care if it's a car, and cars are huge, huge amounts of energy to produce a car. There are ways of making almost everything we have work longer and better by managing and taking care of them. Boy, is this a problem for people living in the U.S. I'm not kidding. We are in a throwaway culture, throwaway society, where we don't seem to take care of anything anymore, much less ourselves. And so it is a really important point to recognize that if we're going to make a change in energy conservation, it also means maintenance. It means becoming conscious of the ways that we can improve how things work and work better longer. Now, this takes some discipline, on ourselves so that we don't ignore maintenance issues, which people have, for some reason, in this country particularly, in these days, have gotten out of the habit of doing. It's like, oh, well, so I'll just go buy a new one. Who cares? Besides which, it'll be an old model once it breaks anyway, and then it gives me a better reason to go buy something even newer. Well, and I've done that myself for many years. I've done it. I know the mentality. It's easy to get into it. But that is a waste of energy. And it's a big waste of energy if you think about it. How much energy does it take to make a flat screen TV? Wow. Huge amounts. And if you decide, well, you know, I'm going to get rid of my flat screen TV every 3 years just because I want the newest and best one, well, what's going to happen in those situations is that we are creating a tremendous energy drain, and the results are going to be that we won't have the ability to make flat-screen TVs that we can eventually afford, and we're going to be choking to death on all the pollutants that we're putting out to produce all these products that we just keep throwing out. Also, what do we do after we throw them out? You know, we're out of places to get rid of stuff. Now, there is a way to get rid of waste that is fairly efficient. It's called a plasma generator, and an ionization plasma generator that destroys the very nature of matter itself and recombines it into any way you might want it to use it. And it's a fairly efficient system, but it's only being done on a small scale. That is a very good way of getting rid of all of our trash. Rather than landfills, which are very bad, by the way, because they outsource gases over time. Some of these gases are methane, which is much worse, like 24 or 5 times worse than CO2. I mean, we haven't got enough CO2, now we're going to have methane all over the place. I mean, this is the problem with landfills. And that's the main way that we are getting rid of our stuff, is with landfills. And it's not a good thing. First of all, we're going to run out of space. I mean, there's always so much garbage that you can put out before there's no more room for all the garbage, right? Okay, you know what? Oh, there's so much more I want to tell you about, but we're out of time. I wanted to mention a couple of things, and if I'm going to mention them, I just don't have any more time to talk about the subject. Hopefully this has made some sense to you. I hope so. Now, our government, I just want to mention this, our government is trying to make some changes in this. We're actually going to send out letters to people in the new administration and tell them about some of the stuff we're doing. But, I mean, I hope that they are going to follow through with what they say they're going to do. Because if they don't, I think we're all in trouble. Let's hope that they do some of the things they said they're going to do about renewable energy, and especially energy conservation. That's the thing that's the biggest issue. I hope I've made my point. Okay, if you have a chance, listen to me on Sundays at between 4 and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on 1170 a.m. radio. If you are in the Boston or Norfolk or Providence, Rhode Island area, just tune in. Hey, if you're not there, you just go to WDISAM.com, anywhere in the world, internet radio, there I am. Okay. And it's live. It's Wildlife Is, just like this show is, live, and you can call in. Okay. And also, if you happen to be in the Phoenix area, because, again, I'm talking to you from a studio in Phoenix, you can come on February 2nd, Monday. I think that's coming up this Monday, from 7 to 8:15 p.m. out at Borders Books and Music in Glendale, Arizona, and hear Mimi talk to you about the etheric realm, which is really about the electromagnetic energy part of our universe. That's what she's going to be talking to you about from 7 to 8:15 p.m. Go join her, and you can talk to her and really enjoy hearing about it and join in yourself. Okay, I hope at this point it has made some sense to all of you that if we're going to make a difference, we have to do energy conservation, because in order to get, if you listen to the prior shows, in order to get any significant amount of renewable energy going, it's going to take many years. Energy conservation we can start doing today or tomorrow, and within a year or two, we can change our entire country and the whole world. We can make those kind of changes. So keep that in mind. If you want to know more, contact me, thoughts@wildlifeis.com. Okay, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for, you know what, Why Life Is.